Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
When they're ready, they'll let us know. Very simple. Ready to do whatever. Doesn't make any difference. Whatever they want to do, I'm ready.
That's the president talking about Iran. And we said to ourselves, we said, we need to talk to somebody who knows a lot about that part of the world, about what could be going on with us in Iran.
Indeed. A lot of strong statements, a lot of talking heads who don't have half an idea what they're talking about. And then you have Ambassador Faisal al-Istrabadi, who's the former Iraq ambassador to the UN, one of the authors of that country's constitution and director for the Center of Something Behind Sean's Head. Thank you. The study of the Middle East at Indiana University. My apologies, Ambassador al-Istrabadi. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. Delighted to be with you again.
Thank you. It's been too long. So why don't we begin with Iran and their recent actions, their motivations. What's their game? What are their goals?
Well, I think that a couple of things. One, as is always the case, regime survival is the number one priority. And there are people in the U.S. administration that have given conflicting signals about that. John Bolton, the national security advisor, very famously wants regime change in Iran. Now, it's interesting because the president has said that he is not interested in regime change. He only wants to ensure that Iran doesn't obtain a nuclear weapon. Now, the problem with that is that the United States is actually transferring nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia as we speak. And so Iran will be looking back across the Gulf and saying, this doesn't look good for us. In the meantime, they were actually complying with the terms of the so-called Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which is what the president calls a nuclear deal. And there is zero evidence that they were not in compliance with those terms. It's the United States which went out of compliance and withdrew unilaterally, couldn't even bring the European allies aboard. And so the Iranians are looking at this and saying, what's our incentive for negotiating? We negotiated, we came to an agreement, we abided by an agreement. And the other side violated it. So what assurances do we have that if we negotiate again, we won't be in the same position a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road? It's one thing to renegotiate. It's another to withdraw and reinstitute sanctions without a justification under the original agreement, at least, and then expect the other side to negotiate again. It's a very tricky situation the president has put the U.S. in, and the Iranians aren't playing his game.
Well, maybe that was the problem with the agreement. I was watching Senator Marco Rubio make the point yesterday that while they were in a compliance with the agreement, as you just said, with the specifics that we discussed, they were not in compliance with the spirit of the agreement, and that they were continuing to be the world's number one exporter of terror and be involved in a bunch of things that we don't like. So how do we deal with that?
Well, you deal with that as such. You don't, that may, first of all, there's no such thing as spirit of an agreement. There's an agreement and there are terms of an agreement, and Senator Rubio knows that. You would be hard if you had made every payment on your mortgage on time and in the proper amount. You would feel mightily put upon if your mortgage company foreclosed on your house because it felt you were not in compliance with the spirit of the mortgage agreement. There are terms of a mortgage agreement, and if you either comply or you don't. This is an international agreement that is sanctioned by six countries, seven if you include Iran, but five, some of America's closest allies, and the United Nations Security Council, on which the United States sits, where it, along with four other powers, has a veto. You have never had a guest on your show more critical of the Iranian government and of its actions in the Middle East than I. There may be others who hold it in the same low regard, the government of Iran, as I do, but you've never had one that holds it in lower regard than I do. But this isn't a game of Monopoly. This is, you know, playing at the highest level in the international community, and there's ways of doing things. And what the president did in unilaterally withdrawing us generally is not it, particularly because I can't tell what the strategy behind the United States actions is. I know what the steps they're taking are, but sanctions are not a policy. What's the policy?
Right. Well, I happen to agree with the president's point of view on the previous agreement, but walking away from it is an enormous gamble.
By the way, candidate Donald Trump agreed with that.
Yeah.
Look, Jim Mattis, General Mattis, the former Secretary of Defense, was against the agreement. He was out of government at the time, of course, and he thought the agreement that the Obama administration entered into was a mistake. But he also thought and testified in Congress when he was still Secretary of Defense that it would be a strategic mistake for the United States to withdraw. And and Trump said that as well. Well, what he said it differently when he was a candidate. What he said was it's an international agreement. It involves our allies, and you can't just walk away from an international agreement. He's right about that. But if you do walk away, you would have thought you would do it in a way that would bring the allies on board so there would be international support. Other than Israel, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates, the United States has no support for what it did in walking away from the agreement, and therefore no way. You know, the United States may be the sort of 800-pound gorilla in international affairs, but as Vietnam proved, I think, two generations ago or a generation ago, the United States still can't do it alone. It's not strong enough to take on the entire world. It needs allies to get its strategic objectives accomplished. And here, I don't even think we know what those objectives are.
How about we start at the top of this discussion, which would be Iran getting a nuclear weapon. Is that something we should, you hold them in low regard, is that something we should just not allow no matter what the price is to pay? We just cannot let Iran have a nuclear weapon?
Well, believe me, as someone, as you know, in your introduction, you pointed out I was an ambassador from Iran's, from the country that shares a 1,000-mile border with Iran. I am the last one that wants to see Iran with a nuclear weapon. But to get us to that state, it would help if the United States weren't transferring nuclear arms technology to Saudi Arabia, Iran's chief rival in the region. And we're also transferring nuclear technology. The United States is transferring technology to the United Arab Emirates as well, another rival, although a much relatively minor rival compared to Saudi Arabia.
Quick question about that. Forgive me for interjecting, but is the hatred, the fear between Iran and Saudi Arabia primarily theological
or the political
Sunni Shia? No. It's good old fashioned.
Yes, so you had to say it's geopolitics. A lot of the talking heads you were talking about when you were introducing the topic, you can't think about the Middle East without thinking about religion. It's politics. When the Shah was running Iran back until 1979, when the mullahs came to power, you had the same tensions between him and the other states, and he was as secular as you could hope for. But by the way, if you want to know who started the Iranian nuclear program, it would be a minor little country you might have heard of called the United States of America.
Well, I've made mistakes through my life, too.
Yes, I understand that. So whenever I hear about the nuclear transfers we're doing to Saudi Arabia, I always sort of in the back of my mind think, what could go wrong?
Ambassador Faisal al-Istrabadi is on the line, former Iraq ambassador to the UN. Obviously, we haven't mentioned a little country there by the Dead Sea, Israel. They certainly have a voice in the region and have made it utterly clear that they're not going to wait till there's a mushroom cloud over Tel Aviv. They're going to strike Iran. Do you take them at their word?
Not really, for a technical reason. They don't have the hardware to do what would be necessary to do to take out any restarted Iranian nuclear program. They were able to take out the Iraqi program back in 1981 or 82. I can't remember now, because the Iranians learned from the lesson that the mistakes Iraq made. They would need to, first of all, they don't have the refueling ability. They don't have the heavy bombers. They don't have the heavy bombs. Basically the only country that can do this is the United States, which is why Netanyahu has been trying to get the U.S. to do it for years. He's been saying for more than a decade that Iran is a year away from a nuclear bomb, which is the odd thing about withdrawing from the deal, because the deal, for all its flaws, and I agree with you, it was a very flawed deal. George W. Bush walked away in 2004, I think it was, from a much stronger deal. He refused to sort of pull the trigger and make an agreement with the Iranians, and the Iranians just kept working. And by the time Obama made his deal in 2015, the terms of the deal were much less in the favor of the United States than if the United States had made an agreement with Iran in 2004. But that's the hand we were dealt. I agree with strengthening the deal. I think there was a way to try to make the deal a little more permanent, or more permanent, or permanent, and to bring Iran within compliance with what's called the Additional Protocol of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. But a unilateral withdrawal without the support even of the European allies, much less Russia and China, as permanent members of the Security Council, I don't think was the way to do it.
So I've been reading a lot about the leader of the Arab Emirates, MBZ, and his role in the Middle East, and how he and MBS with Saudi Arabia are working together to try to eliminate Iran. So this is a really high stakes game, isn't it?
It's an extremely high stakes game, and it's unfortunately one that the U.S. is getting drawn into, and I don't think there's a happy outcome for the United States to be involved in these sorts of regional disputes. The crown prince of the UAE is MBZ, Mohammed bin Zayed, and he is sort of rumored to be kind of the mentor of the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. They both have the titles of crown prince, and they both run their respective countries for a variety of reasons. And they are indeed taking on Iran. Keep in mind, they have been trying to take on the Houthis of Yemen for, 4 or 5 years now? I can't remember exactly when the bombing started. I think it was 2014. It might have been 15. And they haven't been able to take on a rebel group in a little country like Yemen, which they regard that little rebel group as one of Iran's proxies. if they can't take them on effectively, I don't know how they're going to take Iran effectively. And one of my real fears, and keep in mind, I know you introduced me as an Iraqi ambassador, and I was, but I'm also a natural-born citizen of the United States. I'm a natural-born citizen of both countries. So as an American citizen born in the United States, I'm really concerned that one or two regional powers in the Middle East have a real interest in trying to draw the United States into an armed conflict with Iran. And I see no United States national security interest in getting into a shooting war with Iran, although improving the deal with Iran is certainly in the American interest if it can be done through diplomacy.
Faisal al-Istrabadi, former Iraq ambassador to the UN, director of the Center for the Study of the Middle East at Indiana University. Sir, it's always enlightening. We sure appreciate the time. Thanks a million.
It's always a pleasure. I enjoy it very much. Thank you.
Okay. Follow-up, discussion, et cetera, to come. Stay with us.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.